Small Town Podcast is made possible by generous support from the Georgia Municipal Association. GMA supports Georgia cities. Small Town Podcast is supported by Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company. Consolidated Pipe is a full-line supplier of products for the water, wastewater, and natural gas industries, and they serve utilities and public works departments in cities, large and small, every day. They're the exclusive distributor of Master Meter AMI-AMR technology. As a family-owned company with a legacy that began in 1960, let Consolidated Pipe show you that they are dedicated to service. Small Town Podcast is supported by the Southern Mercantile. Visit southernmercantile.com for a blog about small town living and an online store with a selection of carefully curated goods. The Southern Mercantile. Simple living, Southern charm.
I hereby call this episode to order.
Hey, small towners, it's Mayor Matt Seal of the great city of Osceola, and thanks for joining me for another episode of Small Town Podcast. Now, it will come as no surprise that I'm not the only one who loves talking about small towns and sharing small town stories with the world. Well, late last year, one of those other small towners asked to interview me for an episode of a new podcast about small towns. It's called Small Town Sunshine and is hosted by Adrienne Andre. She asked to interview me about my role as the mayor of a small town and why I decided to start a podcast featuring other small towns. Now, I get asked these questions regularly since I was first elected mayor of Osceola and then started Small Town Podcast last year. So I thought this would be a good opportunity to answer some of those questions for you and share another podcast sharing the love of small towns. So here's Adrienne interviewing me for an early episode of Small Town Sunshine.
All right, so tell us a little bit about yourself, where you live, and how you got there.
How I got there, that's the interesting part. I'm in Osceola, Georgia now. I'm the mayor of Osceola, but I didn't grow up here. And that is actually, I think, very odd in small towns because so many times I joke with people. I said, you know, you have to have five generations of your family who have farmed the land in order to run for office, you know, to be from there. Everyone else is just kind of, oh, you're not from around here kind of thing. But I grew up in Hinesville, Georgia, over near Savannah. That's where there's a big military base there. My dad was a teacher at the elementary school on the base. And so I grew up there and graduated high school from Liberty County High School. Went to college at Georgia Tech and, you know, met a lot of people. But there was one in particular, a fraternity brother of mine. His family grows muscadines here in Irwin County, and Osceola's in Irwin County. So I came to visit a lot. And I was living in Atlanta at the time. I stayed in Atlanta after graduating Georgia Tech. And of course, that's the big city and the hustle and bustle. And I thought that's where all the action was at. And, you know, there's plenty of action. But I really like driving through the more rural parts of the state to come visit my friends. And I made the mistake of joking in front of his mother. I said, hey, this is such a nice laid back lifestyle. I need to find some kind of business to invest in down here so I can come more often. Well, I was just, you know, just saying that. You know, kind of half joking. Well, his mother was in the room when I said that. So the next time I came down, she said, I found a building for you to buy. So you can do what you said. And it was a smart building. And I kind of thought she was joking, and I didn't really think much of it. But then she called me when I went back, and I said, no, I'm serious. Next time you come down, there's this old historic building in downtown, and you can buy it. And you know, the people still want to run a business out of it. And so they'll just rent from you. And So, one of the times I came down, my fraternity brother, Chris, he said, well, I'll go introduce you to the girl that runs the front counter of this retail shop. It's her dad and his business partner on the building that are interested in selling. So, I guess, make a long story short, that girl is now my wife. I bought the building, and she thought she was just coming back to Osceola, where she grew up, just for a year to help her dad get this little retail business started. And I convinced her to stay, and I guess about 3.5 years later, we got married. So that's how I came to be in Osceola. So a fraternity brother and kind of lifestyle, and bought a bit of investment property. I was supposed to be a landlord from Atlanta, and obviously life is a journey and has a funny way of changing things for you. So that's how I ended up in Osceola. I don't know if you already asked, but you were interested in talking about how I got into local government too.
So yes. That, right?
I actually was not really interested in politics at all, but I was a downtown business and was sometimes frustrated by the efforts that weren't taking place that should have been to promote local business, to promote downtown, not just retail, but obviously including retail. And now that I had this investment in it, I guess I forgot this part. The retail business that was supposed to run itself and just pay me rent about 6 months to a year after, it kind of fell in my lap. And now I'm the owner of that retail shop that was inside the building I own. So now my wife and I have that operation daily.
Was that your father-in-law's though?
It's now my father-in-law now. Yeah. He wasn't my father-in-law when I bought the building from him. He was supposed to run the business, but again, life's a journey.
Isn't it? Okay.
That was kind of an interesting way to end up in business that you never intended to. So now we run the shops at 4th and Cherry. There's a cafe, in the back of the shops, that serves just lunch. We've got an online business called the Southern Mercantile now. And so we go to markets all the Southeast and we get to talk about our small town. So that's been an exciting adventure that kind of just evolved over time, but it wasn't really well planned out, I'll just say.
What did you study at Georgia Tech? Because actually I have a brother who went to Georgia Tech, and I know it's an engineering school, not a retail shop in small town school, right?
I always liked planes and was very interested in good science and math in high school. So I started at Georgia Tech and declared a major in aerospace engineering.
Okay.
So it only took two quarters to figure out that I probably wasn't going to do well in aerospace engineering. But I enjoyed tech so much, and I like just that atmosphere of the academic atmosphere and the analytical nature of the courses. And so I still wanted to stay. And of course, I'd already put in roots with some of the clubs and a fraternity. So I ended up, there was a major there called Science, Technology, and Culture. And when I say that, people say, "Oh, wow." And so I usually ask them, if you know what I'm supposed to do with that degree, please let me know. It was very interesting. A lot of English philosophy, but a very broad base. So a lot of science. Did have to take some engineering classes. But when you got out with that degree, there was not a kind of an automatic, oh, here's the career you're supposed to go into. I got really interested in finance. I took two economics courses my senior year at Tech. And so ended up in kind of the finance field. So I'm a financial advisor and have my own small private firm now based out of Osceola. So going to Tech and even the degree I got, I don't know what I was supposed to do with it, but I'm sure I'm not doing anything with it that
I feel like nobody I know is doing, you know, you get to a certain point and unless you were very, got to be a doctor, you know, on a very strict path, nobody I know is.
Pretty deliberate.
Yes. And it's funny when I meet people who are going to college, they're like, what am I going to major in? I'm like, who cares? Just do whatever. Right. Get it done.
Yeah. I enjoyed all my classes and, just had a great time and feel like I learned a lot about a lot, because it was kind of you got the chance to delve into a lot of topics. I actually got a minor in music because I was very involved with the band while I was there.
Nice.
People don't think of Georgia Tech as, oh, okay, you went there and you were in the band. But they have a great music program. So, yeah, just kind of got a broad base. And, yeah, so I guess I'm one of those people that say I'm a jack of all trades, master of none.
But now you've owned the retail shops for a long time, right? I mean, it's been a while.
Yes. Like I said, those kind of fell into my lap. And then my wife is really the kind of, I guess her title would be director of operations. She runs things, and we've got a good staff that runs that. So, and especially since I've been the mayor, I'm actually in the building during business hours less and less because there's so much else going on. So I've had much less to do with that directly on a day-to-day basis than one might think by me saying, oh, I own a retail shop. So, the main thing I do is the financial business. And then, of course, in the last 3 years since I've been the mayor of Osceola, that's taken up a considerable amount of time trying to do some things and make some progress for the community.
Yeah. So let me ask you about being mayor. What, I mean, in a small town, it's about 3,000 in Ocala.
Right, 3,400.
Mm-hmm. 3,400. So how is that and excuse me if it truly is, but is it a full-time job? It seems like it would be maybe not hourly full-time, but I can't believe you walk anywhere in Ocala and don't get requests or.
That's very astute of you. So I tell people, I've got kind of a standard answer. It is part-time by pay. But virtually full time by hours. Ocala does not have a city manager, so the person that usually takes care of day to day operations. There's some really good department heads, but there's not a city manager. I knew, and I was reluctant to get into it. I just felt like there's so much potential in Ocala, and you know, here I am with this investment in downtown, and didn't feel like the right efforts were being made to promote the economy, to build some things, to lay some of the foundations to make sure that it could grow. So I finally got convinced to run in a special election in 2015, and then had to run again for re-election last year. So they're stuck with me for another 4 years. This is the first of my first year of a 4 year term. Every week is different. Every day is different. But I feel very confident in saying that I spend at least 25 hours a week doing stuff for the city, whether that's going to meetings at the regional or the state level, or actively in City Hall or out with somebody, a department head, looking at a project with an engineer to apply for a grant to do some infrastructure, which we've done some successful projects in the past couple of years already. So I'm sure there's weeks where there's actually more than 40 hours involved. I just try to make sure that I pay attention to some of my other, business things there. So it was something I'm not, and I don't really have any political aspirations. I tell people I don't even want to be a mayor some days when I'm the mayor of Ocala. It's funny you said that about walking. I'm sitting in my house right now. And if the weather is fine and I don't have to carry any, heavy things, into town, it's not uncommon at all for me just to walk to City Hall. It is about maybe 3.5 blocks from here. The building I own is another block away from City Hall, where I'll go check in there. I've got a private office in that building, and sometimes just walk back and forth. And sometimes people just want to honk and wave because they recognize me because I'm the mayor. And sometimes people will do a U-turn in the highway to see tell me about the issue with, the pothole or, my ditch won't drain right. Or, hey, my water bill is really high this particular mm-hmm. month. And that definitely happens yes. pretty frequently that we get the request. But on the other hand, I think people enjoy having the access, and for the most part, me talking to people is the only way I'm going to know what the real issues are. And so while there's definitely a temptation to say, I'm just going to stay in the office today and not be seen out in town during business hours. I've actually been able to try to make sure that if something wasn't a priority for me as an individual, or it's not something I noticed as a problem, it's making me more aware of some of the bigger issues in the city that's my responsibility to try to find a solution for. So
tell me about running as a newcomer. I do find that interesting because I would think that it's a little bit more of an uphill battle. Did you have to explain yourself, where you came from and all that, or did people already kind of know you?
There were definitely people that knew me because I owned the shops. And I guess you get partial credit if you marry a local. And so my wife, now funny enough, her family, her mother and father both came from other places. Her mother grew up in Virginia. Her father grew up in Colorado, and they met in college. And they were both elementary school teachers. And so in the 70s, when they got out of college, this was one of the few places that had two teaching positions available. They thought, well, we'll just stay here a couple of years until we find another place. And they ended up staying here all their lives, raising a family, and retiring here. And,
right.
And now we live right next door to my in-laws. So that's fun.
You don't get a break all day, right?
it's all good and fun in the small town. Yes. Because I had the shops and because I try to get involved with the Chamber of Commerce and I attended council meetings out of some genuine concern, not out of any political ambition. I had some of the circles in town I was familiar to. Right. There were certainly other people that I had to introduce myself to. And so I was actually reluctant to run. And I know, you know, people probably say that all the time. I've been encouraged to run in previous elections and just flat out told people, no, I'm good. I could see, you know, being more involved and more engaged if I need to be, but elected office, that was actually, the previous year, there was a seat that was available in local government, and people encouraged me to do it. And I just said, no, I'm just not interested. And then the next year, when this seat came available for the mayor of Osceola, I just got, I guess, more pressure than I could take. So I got pushed out into traffic, I guess.
Yeah.
And I knew, because that was a special election, I only had the remainder of the term. The previous mayor resigned to run for a state house seat. So there was only 2 years left of what would normally be a 4-year term. And I decided when I talked to my wife and we decided, okay, this, if we feel like we can make an impact in this way, it's worth giving it a shot. But when I won, I knew I'd have to run for re-election at least once, because if you want to make some kind of lasting changes, 2 years, especially when you're learning how to do everything right to start, probably isn't enough time. So I don't know where I'll go beyond that, but, I feel like we're doing some things to make some changes across several areas of the community, and we'll see where it goes.
How do you like being mayor? Are you glad you ran?
I'm actually ready for this question, because people ask this all the time. So how do you like being the mayor? All of the things that kept me from wanting to run, I think I had a good picture of. The frustrations you deal with, the people that will catch you at the grocery store or, you know, corner you after a church service or whatever, those things still happen. But I was kind of prepared for those. And so that has met expectations. It wasn't worse than I thought, but it's still, you know, some of the things. And some of the people you're dealing with that don't understand a lot of the details. They don't get engaged and involved and ask questions. And every community's got those, small or big. You know, you're just going to have people that just make assumptions about things and just, you know, shake their fist at City Hall just because that's this dominant force or whatever. So those frustrations exist, and that's kind of what kept me from it. I will say that the positive things and the community support and what we've been able to do, and I guess some of the, I guess I'll just use the word benefits generically, have exceeded expectations. And so there's a good sense of community involvement that I didn't see before. The people who want to tell me, hey, you're doing a good job, I appreciate you looking into this, and being very understanding that things take time. I would not call us a wealthy community. We're an ag-based economy. I'm the only incorporated city in our county. Our county has less than 10,000 people in it. You know, it's a very rural area, and that has a bunch of great benefits for quality of life. But rural Georgia and rural America is definitely going through some challenges right now, and those things are getting highlighted at our state capitol and at the U.S. Capitol. Mm-hmm. And so in dealing with those struggles and challenges, people are understanding and people wanting to work and wanting to see things better. And so that come togetherness, I guess, where I just made up a word there, has been better than expected. So that's been nice.
So how has it, so would you say that's changed the way you look at Osceola? I mean, do you feel more attached? I mean, or do you feel it's changed your perception of it?
I think I had a realistic perception of it. And if I didn't feel attached, I would have felt no sense of, to say duty or obligation might be too much, but I felt like, if I have the ability to make a positive impact in some areas in Osceola and being the mayor affords me the opportunity to do that, the attachment is what finally convinced me, okay, if I've got these people that really think I can have an impact in this role, I feel like this is home now. You know, I didn't grow up here, wasn't born here, wasn't raised here, didn't go to high school here, and I've still made it my home. At first, it was just a place where I visited friends, and it was a place I bought a building as an investment. But now it's home, and so the attachment was already there.
So you mentioned agriculture. What are the biggest hurdles you are facing right now?
So I mean, agriculture is, I mean, it's Georgia's number one industry. So there's a lot of counties that are, you know, ag based, especially in our part of the state. So I guess the challenges that go with that, if you're so ag-based that is what sinks or swims your economy, then you're very dependent on things like weather and commodity prices and, you know, was it a good harvest? So there's definitely that. So I guess the challenge, and I think what Osceola and Irwin County and what a lot of small towns and rural parts of Georgia and probably other states too are trying to do is diversify their economies. The challenges there are, well, we're used to being ag-based. So there's a mindset shift. There's a mindset shift that has to happen. And then there's, well, we're set up to do farming and we're set up to maybe do some value add there. And even that creates some challenges. A lot of the farming, of course, takes place outside of the city of Osceola, but we have a cotton gin where the value add occurs. We have some peanut buying points where they do drying and grading. We're looking at getting more of that because even though that's ag based, it's still a step beyond the actual growing. But then also trying to develop, you know, retail, trying to develop professional businesses, trying to create some higher wage jobs. The challenges there are. Rural broadband is a big issue in Georgia and the rest of other rural areas throughout America. If you have low population density, which small towns and all you are is a small town surrounded by the rest of the unincorporated county, you don't have the population density that attracts that private investment. So that affects education, that affects workforce development, that affects healthcare, and all those things have additional issues besides the connectivity that are kind of creating a widening gap between the economic development and prosperity of larger metropolitan areas and rural areas. And that's in Georgia and that's in other states. And that's all over the place.
Yeah,
and
I know that happens in Florida. I mean, problem in central areas of Florida. Not Disney World areas. We have other central areas. Disney World has all the broadband.
A lot of farming going on in Florida.
Oh yeah.
So they're dealing with the same things that that agricultural areas of Georgia and other states are dealing with too. Those are things where some of that we can try to find some solutions on our own. We're actually currently working with a local guy who has done some work contracting for big telecommunications companies laying fiber, and he's looking to possibly go into business on his own to do internet service. And so we may be able to kind of solve our own rural broadband problem locally, but that costs money.
Of course.
And you got to have long-term prospects for that because of that population density. So we've got some possible local solutions, but then of course they're dealing with this at the state level and it gets talked about at the federal level inside the Department of Agriculture. We're lucky to have our former governor, Sonny Perdue, that's the Secretary of Agriculture now. So we feel like we got a little extra connection there in Georgia. those issues, that's an economic development issue. And I think that's one of the other things it's not really a pro or a con. It just kind of is what it is. Because of my business background, I'm a lot more focused on economic development in my head. But from day one, as the mayor of a small town, I'm trying to do some downtown development, economic development, and job creation and wealth creation. But I also got to deal with infrastructure issues because there's a utilities department, and, sanitation. We merge those into public works, but still, all those things have to happen at the city level. We got a fire department, a police department, so I get to deal with public safety issues. The some of the interesting challenges with law enforcement and the interaction between law enforcement and the community that are happening all across the nation. We're not immune to that. So there's just a broad swath of things that fall on my desk or hit me as soon as I walk out the door. So we got challenges, and then there's just the day-to-day things that happen that have to be dealt with. So it's never a dull moment, and like I said, every day is different.
No, I would imagine. I would imagine there are some surprises, even though you knew, obviously, that you were going to deal with law enforcement, for instance.
Right.
But then when you actually have to do it.
You just don't know how you're going to deal with it because you don't have any experience before. Yeah.
So what advice would you give somebody who wants to get involved in their local government?
The easiest thing is go to meetings that may at first be boring and you don't know exactly what's going on because, depending on how involved or what the topics are, there may be words or acronyms or lingo that just doesn't make any sense. But go to meetings where you don't know what's on the agenda and you don't, because people love to come to the meetings where they find out there's this one thing on the agenda and they are opposed to it. And so they want to come and fight City Hall and tell everybody what's what. I will say this, you will have a lot more credibility. And I'll say this for anybody in Osceola, you'll have a lot more credibility if you want to talk to me about an issue. If you're one of the few people that actually comes to every meeting and is just already engaged and trying to understand what's going on. And then when you have a concern, that there's just a different perspective altogether, because that person's going to have just a lot more sense of what's going on and how the council is interacting and what their thoughts are on other things. So while that seems boring, and as the person has to lead those meetings, sometimes it is very boring. That's what I did, not meaning to get into the government at all. I just was a guy who had some property, and so I had a vested interest in downtown and Osceola. And would go and just see, hey, how is this local government running itself and how is it taking care of these issues and what are the issues they're dealing with, and listen to the conversations. From there, it's amazing to me because I've actually discovered boards and committees I didn't know existed until I became the mayor and had to get involved with the appointment process on some of those things. So especially in a small town, I am sure that Osceola is not alone in having a hard time finding people willing to serve on the planning and zoning board. We have an ethics committee. I've started a land bank authority, and I'm having a hard time, you know, filling some of those positions. There's a downtown development authority. There's the local chamber of commerce board. There's all kinds of different aspects of local government that need people's input. Now, I know there's small towns. I'm sure there are. Where they just want the same five people to serve on everything so they can control everything. But I'm willing to bet that in more places than not, the council, the mayor, the local officials would actually rather have more people engaged and not have one person that's on three different boards because right. they couldn't get anybody else. And especially, I'm actually trying to do this in Osceola now. I am actively trying to find people who are in their 20s to be on some of these boards. And I'm going to people that look at me like, I don't even go to council meetings. I don't even know what's going on. And so I tell them, well, I'd like you to find out, and this is a way to get you in. So I don't expect you to say much during the first several. Your input will be needed for certain things, and I hope you'll give it. But other than your attendance and participation, I'm not asking much of you. I'm asking for your time towards this aspect of your community. And so I'm starting to make a little headway by doing that. But if anyone showed me the least bit of interest, then they would be at the top of that list. And so if someone's interested in getting engaged and just kind of frustrated, just make yourself known at these meetings. Not that you have to stand up and give a speech and go on a tirade about, you know, the potholes or, you know, the squirrels eating the nuts on the trees or, you know, whatever. I mean, we actually have had that a couple of times in meetings. But just to show interest in your community, and willing to try to engage and kind of keep tabs on what's going on, even when it may not be the most interesting topics. Yeah.
Well, and I've noticed, for at least in my town, if you go to the city council meeting where it's, you know, something controversial is happening and 200 people show up, you're not really going to get noticed. But if you go to the regular old city council meeting, there's not as many people there. So you stand out. So if you keep going to those meetings, you don't even have to do much, and people right. will start to notice you're sitting there and you're the guy who's always sitting there. So,
in a small town, it's so much easier to get engaged that way, because mm-hmm. I'm sure in a much bigger city, 200 people is the normal crowd at some kind of council meeting, or maybe even the planning and zoning board or something like that, because it's just bigger. So there's more people. So for folks in a small town, you know, there's some disadvantages. You don't have enough people to do this. And there's critical mass for certain amenities you can't have or whatever. But what it means that it takes fewer people to have a bigger impact.
Right.
So that definitely is true in the case we're talking about here. One or two people that start getting engaged at the local level just by going to meetings, asking a member of the council or the mayor. If someone asked me, hey, can I buy you lunch and ask you about, I've had a couple people do that in my 3 years as mayor. And every time I schedule a lunch and because that person's just interested in having a conversation. They don't necessarily agree with all of my perspectives on things or how I'm doing everything, but we're finding out more about each other. And I've never had one of those meetings or lunches or whatever where I didn't learn something or kind of get something from their perspective that stayed with me moving forward. So I hope, and I know because I've met some of the other ones, I hope that all the mayors and council members of small towns are very open to having conversations with anybody that wants to. Most of them are.
Yes.
Most of them are in the position they're in because they want to do better for their community. Yes. And that means working with others and collaborating and listening to opinions other than their own.
Yeah. And I think what people, you know, if they don't realize, especially when you say the people in their 20s, I would say that, you know, I think it's easy to say, oh, this town is small. There's not to belittle almost. I hate to say this, but the position, but you think 3,400 people, you're affecting those lives. That's a lot of lives you're affecting. Yeah. So anybody who gets involved is affecting a lot of people. They really you really can have an effect on a lot of people by getting involved in any way. So,
even beyond that, everybody would tell you that they want us to grow as a community, want to create more jobs. We create more jobs, we'll employ some people that are already here, but we'll also bring some new people here. So you're talking about affecting lives of people that don't even live here yet, potentially, if we get this right.
Right. So you started a podcast, which of course I'm interested in. What gave you that idea? I mean, is that to benefit Osceola, or is it just to get you out and meet other Georgia leaders, or what was the inspiration behind that?
You mentioned at the beginning of this conversation that probably a lot of people had never heard of Osceola. Mm-hmm. And I told you, actually, there's a part of this story where more people do now than before. There is a missing persons case. A teacher and a former beauty queen went missing in October of 2005. It was investigated. It was by some considered a cold case, although I say this every time, local law enforcement in Osceola never considered a cold case. When I became the mayor 10 years later, they were still following up every single lead, and I wasn't aware of it before, but of course now the police department works for the mayor and the city, so I was much more in the loop, and it was amazing to see how interested they were and how they were still determined to follow up every possible thing, even things they didn't know, they didn't think were gonna lead to much. They still give it a shot. Payne Lindsay is the name of the man who came down and did a podcast on that case. It was called Up and Vanished. He actually just started season 2. And so it profiled the case. And of course, since it happened in Osceola, profiled Osceola. And it confirmed for me what I knew to be true already. Small towns usually only get any kind of play in the media when something negative happens.
Yes.
Something like a missing persons case or some other crime, some kind of corruption, some kind of, maybe a natural disaster or environmental something happens in this town. And then all of a sudden, all this media attention comes. So it just happened by coincidence that the GBI, and this had become the largest case file in GBI history, had a press conference. And it was like 12 years after the disappearance, the first press conference they ever held, and they announced that they had made an arrest in the case for someone for the murder of Tara Grinstead was her name. And that was right in the middle of this podcast. So Payne Lindsay ends up on TV all over the place, you know, in Osceola. His podcast starts getting, you know, way over 1 million downloads per episode. And so a lot of people got to know Osceola because that's where this happened. And that ended up being the focus of this podcast. And so people's impression of my town was not a great one.
Right.
Because that was all they knew about it. Oh, don't go there. That's a place where this bad thing happens. So I kind of thought, well, what could I do? And actually it was Payne and his producer, Donald Albright, that actually helped me connect with a production, a company called Resonate Recordings that does a lot of the mix and mastering, a little bit of the editing, and helps with the production to make it a more professional. And they helped me with the equipment I would need to make sure it's professional grade. And so I started this podcast to tell the whole story of small towns. I've referenced Osceola a lot in my conversations, but since you've heard the episodes, I go to other small towns so far, just in Georgia. Would love to expand into other states in the future. The Georgia Municipal Association has been a huge sponsor. They help me financially. They help promote it because it's all their member cities, of course, are in Georgia. And about 75 to 80% of them are, by my definition, small towns. And I just define that as a population of less than 10,000. Okay. I know some people that have 12,000 still think they're small, but I had to pick a cutoff number somewhere. So that was kind of what got it started, what inspired it is, hey, and I'm not, I know it's not as popular as Up and Vanished. It's not getting the same number of downloads and listeners. But I at least wanted to make it available for people to get the whole story and the good parts. And we talk about the struggles. We talk about some of the rural issues I've already referenced in right. our conversation here. But we also talk about, you know, the quality of life. You hear some funny stories of things that, you know, just only happen in small towns. I have a kind of a list of questions that I ask people, you know, things like, you know, in a small town, a lot of times there's just one person that's of great influence and they're usually not an elected official. So yeah. Who is that in your town? And I've heard there's a lawyer in one case. It's a banker in the other. I guess both of those make sense. He'll sue you if you don't do the right thing, or they won't give you the money to finance the project.
Right.
But, you know, sometimes it's a club of people that are just really the high influencers. And it's something that, you know, one person or one club wouldn't have that level of influence in a big city. So people that have only known the big city can't possibly imagine that. So I want them to hear that, yeah, the mayor always checks in with the garden club before they go forward with a project, because if they don't have their support, it's you know, he's not going to get reelected.
Yeah.
Happen and, you know, that's that. So that ends up being the conversation. And when I do those regular episodes on a small town, I find usually a mayor, a long-standing council member. I've also interviewed a volunteer fire chief in one of my episodes. He was the volunteer fire chief for 37 years in the same community. So just getting their life story, and a lot of times they were born and raised there, mm-hmm. and every once in a while they were somewhere else. And you know, it's how in the world, just like you asked me, how in the world did you get to, you know, this right. small town that you probably didn't hear of until you know were years into your life. So it's not about Osceola, although Osceola certainly fits that profile. And I like that I get the reference to Osceola every time. So I do want to promote my town. But there's so many other small towns that still have that, I guess, that brand that I want to make sure is a positive brand. And sometimes in the 6 o'clock news or you know, different versions of the media, it's not that way. So I'm just trying to shine the spotlight on the small towns that often get overshadowed by all the hustle and bustle of the big city.
I certainly understand that. And I will say, for the disappearing case, I notice in my town there's one or two things that have happened in, you know, the 40 years my family has been here, and that have made the big news. And you do feel like, I mean, we're in Florida. We've only had one hurricane we had half, kind of a very small one, too. And people are still like, isn't that where all the hurricanes come? And, you know, of course, hurricanes can come, but you just heard of that one. You know what I mean?
That's the only thing they know about.
Right. You just, like, day to day, I'm not fighting windstorms or anything. So
right.
it's kind of funny, because if that happened all the time in Osceola, if beauty queens were, you know, disappearing every other day, then it wouldn't be a news story anymore.
Right.
Like,
well,
if you're,
that's the ironic part. I've pointed out to people, if anyone ever, cause it's funny. I mentioned that my wife and I have an online store and blog called the Southern Mercantile. We've gone to markets throughout the Southeast, and we'll be in Birmingham. We'll be in Mobile. We'll be up in Atlanta. We'll be in Jacksonville. And when we started doing this a few years ago, it's common for people to come to a market and like your setup and say, oh, do you have a store nearby? Are you local? Mm-hmm. Oh, no, we're just from this small town in South Georgia you've probably never heard of. Oh, what's it called? Osceola. And in the beginning, people say, yeah, I've never heard of that. What's it near? And then we'd, you know, talk of Georgia geography as much as they know about it. And then mm-hmm. if they know where it is. In the last year and a half, that has not been the case. We say Osceola, Georgia, and they say, oh, it, Up and Vanished, or oh, the Tara Grinstead case, people know us for that and that alone. It's weird. I've had a couple instances, because Payne actually interviewed me twice for episodes. I asked him, hey, if you have the opportunity, please talk more about the town and the community. And so then he asked me to interview, and we talked about you know, just different aspects of it. So I was on two different times. And so people who have listened to, you know, every episode of Up and Vanished, they will, my wife will say, oh, and actually my husband's the mayor. He's been on that podcast. And they'll come over and they'll say, talk, let me see if I recognize your voice. And it's kind of, it's kind of odd. So I don't think I'm going to get the number of downloads and listeners that it did to counteract that. But I'm also trying to make sure that I talk about other small towns. Like yeah. Willacoochee, Georgia was my first interview with Lace Futch, former mayor from there, and Pelham, Georgia, and Greensboro, and Washington. I can't name them all, so I'm sorry for all the cities I just didn't name. But yeah, there's some just great small towns with a great feel. And I'm really glad that you, and I know there's some others doing the same kind of efforts to try to encourage people to find small towns. They're these great hidden treasures.
Right.
And just enjoy what they have to offer.
Yeah. And how is it, I mean, you've met all these other mayors now. Has that helped you in your job as mayor? Yes. I mean, because you must, it's like masterminding mayors.
That was in the back of my mind was kind of a side benefit. But I try to go after people that have been in office for a long time. Mm-hmm. So I just referenced the first interview I did, a man named Lace Futch. Lace is 79. He may have turned 80 since the podcast episode. That was actually close to a year ago. So he may be 79 or 80 years old. He was the mayor of Willacoochee, all through the 80s. And then has had some various other positions in what I'll call local government, state. He was the head of a state agency and then ran a regional development center for many years and then became the mayor of Willacoochee again. And then now he's actually the chairman of his county commission. So he's got all this experience and being able to sit and talk to him about how he, because his claim to fame and the interesting thing about Willacoochee, Georgia, I know it's a funny sounding name. He even says that.
I like his name too, between the
Lace
two.
Lace Futch from Willacoochee, Georgia. He said people look at him funny all the time when he introduces himself as that. But he made it his goal when he first became mayor, he wanted to create more jobs than there were people living in Willacoochee. And by the time he was done, there were more jobs than there were people living in that town. So he said used to people in Willacoochee would have to drive to the next town or the next county in some cases for work. And now it's the other way around. They've got an industrial park. They brought in investors. Listening to how he went about some of those things. And I'm not sure all of them are legal under today's standards, but just picking up that knowledge, you know, not just with Lace Futch, but others, I get a chance to, in a sense, stand on the shoulders of giants and learn from what they've gone through and succeeded at, as well as, well, here's this one thing I tried. Let me tell you not to do this. So that's been a much bigger benefit than I knew I'd get some benefit from it, but just making those contacts and being able to call on those people. I've gotten in a great network of people on the economic development side. So there's a Main Street program in Georgia. I know other states have it too, but the Main Street managers, people with their downtown development authorities, people with their local chambers of commerce, and seeing what other communities are doing to build their downtown, to develop industry, to do that diversification of industry and businesses that they have, like we mentioned before. I don't give credit to Jessica Reynolds, was the first person I heard this from, and she's the Main Street manager for the state, for the Department of Community Affairs. So she runs that at the state level. And she said, R&D doesn't mean research and development. It means rip off and duplicate. You find something that's working in someone else's city and you modify it to make sure it works in yours. And there nobody's, you know, there's no disadvantage to them. Right. And there's a great network and environment of collaboration in a bunch of these organizations where people get together from all the communities and say, hey, here's what work and you guys should try this. It could work for you. We did this. We put together this festival, this 3-day event. We tried to start recruiting these kinds of businesses. We tried this incubator, this, you know, whatever. And not everything's going to work in every community, but you get to see things that work other places that could work in your community that you could benefit from. And so I've gotten to network in a lot of other small towns across the state, and even places where I haven't done an interview yet, where they are interested in me coming, I get to talk to them about their community and some of the things they're doing on infrastructure and public safety, you know, as well as economic development. And so that, yeah, that's been a huge benefit. So a lot of the things I've tried to incorporate, I've gotten those ideas either from people I've met doing the podcast or through the conferences and meetings we have at the Georgia Municipal Association with other mayors and council members. And, you know, everybody says it, and I knew it in my head before that networking is really important, but right. It has been just so crucial to anything I'm trying to do.
Some basic recommendations. What's your favorite meal in town?
Oh goodness. Well, see, I have a restaurant, so I'm gonna have a hard time going anywhere else. So if you like, it's light fare. We do a lot of salads, homemade chicken salads and pimento cheese, mm-hmm. and that's at the shops at 4th and Cherry. So we call it the Cafe at 4th and Cherry. That is a great place to go. It is open for lunch only, and it's actually Tuesday through Friday. The shops is open on Saturday, but the cafe is not. We've tried it before. We're just not ready. We're not a draw yet on a Saturday. So there's plenty of things open, but not enough people are coming for lunch for us. But Tuesday through Friday, that's the best place to go for lunch. So I'll give a shameless plug to my own business. But I will say this. There is the best fried chicken you've ever put in your mouth. Comes from a place called Chicken Delight. They were actually listed in Garden and Guns. I don't know if it was a top 10 list or some of the South best fried chicken. And so, you know, obviously you make it in a big time Southern right. magazine, you know, it must be good. So, Chicken Delight, it's actually, there is one building between City Hall where my office is and Chicken Delight. And when I come out the back door with full intentions of going to my own cafe to get lunch where I don't have to, you know, I don't have to pay for it. I mean, I'm kind of paid for it for the business, but
right.
I usually just make a sandwich or get a salad or something like that. The smell of Chicken Delight tempts me every day. And every once in a while, my wife will say, hey, so did you ever eat lunch? Yeah. I got a chicken box at Chicken Delight. So, but there's some, there's just a bunch of great places and not just in Osceola, but in Irwin County.
Okay. Is there some place, let's say people want to go for a hike, some place to get out in nature around Osceola, where would you tell, or a good view? Is there some place for them to do that kind of thing?
So we are a wide open, a lot of fields, a lot of places to go. There is the, and this is of historical significance too, the Jefferson Davis capture site. So Jefferson Davis, that was president of the Confederacy, was actually captured. That put the definite end to the Civil War, which depending on which side you were pulling for, that, you know, you may like or not like that. But he was captured in near Irwinville, which is about 10 minutes to the west of Osceola. And so it used to be a state park, and it's now actually run by the county. But it's just a small park, and there's a museum there. There's a little bit of a trail, not a really long hiking trail, but that's a good outdoor place to go. There's just plenty of places to walk around. I'll say this, and there's not a specific hiking trail, but I definitely put in a plug for them. We actually have the largest muscadine vineyard in the whole world in Irwin County, just outside of Osceola, on the east side of the county. And they've actually started making muscadine wine. So they are
nice.
Building a tasting room right now. And if you just want to drive out that way, I mean, you think of, oh, California, the Napa Valley, that's where all the rolling hills of the vineyards are. But we've got those right here in South Georgia.
Give everybody listening a reason to visit Osceola or move there, whichever's better.
It is just a great, fun place to be. We actually have, I'll do this too. There's a couple of events that happen throughout the year that people should come down for if they want to come to a specific.
Yeah, please.
We are the home of Dave Prater, who was the Dave in Sam and Dave. So from the R&B and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Soul Man and Hold On, I'm Coming and all those great hits. Dave Prater started here. And so we started a few years ago. They had a Dave Prater Day, and it was such a big hit. When I became mayor, I went and asked the family, hey, is it okay if we kind of turn this into an annual music festival? So it started out small. We're building it up. We've actually started a scholarship fund, and we've awarded a couple scholarships to graduating seniors who want to go into a career in music. But we have a worship service, a community worship service at Mount Olive AME Church, where he started his career singing in the choir. That's what we say, career. He didn't get paid for that, but it counts. We have a banquet on Thursday night, And that's where we award the scholarship now. And then Friday night, we have a big block party with live music. And it starts out with the jazz band from the high school and the show choir performing. And then after that, have a live band, a block party, and a good time. And we're looking to expand that. So that's in May. So you can check us out. There's actually a website called PraterMusicFest.com where you can see the details of that. And then actually it's coming up soon. The last weekend of October every year, we have the Georgia Sweet Potato Festival. And that has just become over the years this huge event. So the population of Ocilla is usually 3,400. It has reached as high as, I might be embellishing a little bit, but I know it's gotten to close to 14 or 15,000.
Whoa, that's a lot.
So it triples or quadruples. So that has become a time for class reunions to happen. In fact, I just got a phone call earlier this week, maybe it was last week, asking for my T-shirt size because I told you I didn't grow up here, didn't graduate high school here. But I've been made an honorary member of the Irwin County High School Class of 95. So I appreciate that.
That is an honor.
At the park, College Hill Park, one of our two parks in the city, they actually set up a little, 10 by 10 spaces, and not just one, class of whatever year, but they do about 20 years worth of classes. And so you just got, and they actually have started where they've had so many classes over so many years that all meet at the same time. At the nighttime activities, they have to rent two different spaces because there's people who graduated long ago and then their children are now coming for their class reunions. And parents and children don't often want to, class at the same time. So they had to rent two different spaces for the nighttime activities because the parents apparently were holding back the fun, or maybe they were having too much fun. I'm not sure what.
Yes, or maybe the kids don't want to see their parents.
So that is, yeah, exactly. That's been going on just the last few years. So it's just become such a big event that it's a class reunion time. So there's an arts and crafts festival. That's sponsored by and really benefits our local ARC. The American Legion hosts a classic car show and raises money that they give away the rest of the year in scholarships and funds they give to a lot of student organizations and veterans in the area. And so it's a big deal. It's a big parade, a lot of festivities. And like I said, the population, like I said, I guess that's a politician to me. Maybe I lied a little bit about the 15,000, but it's well over 10, 11. I know it's gotten to 12,000 before. It's just a really big crowd for a town our size. And so yeah. Nice. So those are the two big events that go on every year. But there's just always something going on in a small town. If there's not some scheduled event, people just get together and say, hey, we're meeting over at so-and-so's house and just come on. Yeah. And sometimes that's at a house in town, and sometimes that's out in the field somewhere in the country. And, it's just a good time. So, I've lived in a big city. I've lived in a small town. There's certainly amenities and, all the hustle and bustle, and that's some excitement that people need sometimes. But if you want the laid-back lifestyle and just have a good time with some good people, a small town is a good place to be. Ocilla is one of those great small towns.
Well, thank you so much for doing this with me. I really appreciate it. So,
yeah, absolutely. Thank you for what you're doing. So we're trying to get the love of small towns out
there. That's pretty much it. That's pretty much the goal. I want to thank Matt for coming on the show and giving us all of his insight about small towns and their government. You can learn more about Matt and his podcast at smalltownpodcast.com. I want to thank Karen Silak for providing the music. I want to encourage you to follow us on Facebook and on Instagram. The Instagram is @smalltown_sunshine. And if you just do facebook.com/smalltownsunshine, you'll find us. I'll put all those links in the show notes. Thank you all for listening. I'm Adrienne Andre, fan of America's Unsung Places, encouraging you to find more community in your community. Before you go, please take a second to subscribe so you automatically know when the next episode comes out. I'll see you next time on Small Town Sunshine.
Well, small towners, that'll do it for this episode of Small Town Podcast. I hope you enjoyed getting to know a little more about me and about my great small town of Osceola. And I hope you'll check out the other episodes of Small Town Sunshine. You can check them out at www.smalltownsunshine.com. As always, we thank our season sponsors, the Georgia Municipal Association, Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company, and the Southern Mercantile, for supporting us as we explore and share great small towns. I'll talk to you soon, and y'all are welcome to come to Osceola anytime.
Small Town Podcast is an Irwinomics production that tells the stories of America's great small towns. We release new episodes every other week, featuring small towns through stories of the people who live and lead there, and sometimes exploring issues that affect small towns everywhere. Our podcast episodes are made possible with editing assistance from Resonant Recordings, who also mixes and masters all of our episodes. You can subscribe to Small Town Podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, and the next episode will download while you sleep. You can also leave us a rating and review, which would help us reach new listeners. We would really appreciate it. Beyond our episodes, you can hang out with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also learn more about us and the towns we visit by stopping by our website, www.smalltownpodcast.com. We love to show you all the small towners out there, some great images from the small towns we visit, and let you know about the festivals and events you can participate in and the places you hear about on our podcast. Thanks for listening, and we hope to see you real soon.
We stand adjourned.